How about another week? How about another? Well, let's push this back another Sunday. Would you like more analysis and hype and terrible questions and terrible columns and all that stuff? Let's put 3 week break seems fine for us, right?
Only if you can extend the Roger Goodell press conference for 6.5 hours would I agree to that.
Oh, it's still on now?
Perfect. It's still going on as we speak. You know, he just was talking about the Pro Bowl, and he said, I was really disappointed what I saw on Sunday. And, you know, I disagree. I thought Vanessa Hudgens made a wonderful Rizzo in Greece.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I think there was a lot of – listen, we had our own NHL All-Star game here almost lapping over it, and there was definitely one sporting event that seemed a little more entertaining than the other. We'll put it that way.
You guys crushed it. I know, like you know, it's the Pro Bowl when there's NHL all over my Twitter feed because I don't follow a lot of hockey writers. It's like, well, I guess this can only mean one thing: is the NFL once again screwed up its Pro Bowl, and now the NHL All Star Game is the star of the show.
So your analysis of what likely will happen Sunday has it, before you give it to us, has it actually swung in one direction or the other? It felt like a lot of people love the Panthers the off week, and then early this week. It just felt like people were trying to talk themselves more into the Broncos because of the defense and how they chased Roethlisberger and Brady around. Have you changed, or are you right where you were when we were there 12 days ago?
I kind of went on the same journey you went on. Now, it is my job when I'm writing game previews and doing analysis to keep playing devil's advocate against myself, to not make a pick the moment that, the Panthers beat the daylights out of the Cardinals and stick with it. You know, so I go through the stats. I didn't watch a lot of tape, but I talked to a lot of experts. And it just, you know, after that talking yourself into it thing, it solidifies the feeling for the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, talking to a lot of the experts here and talking to a lot of the guys who are TV guys, you know, sitting there with Terrell Davis yesterday when he was talking to the media, and, you know, this is a longtime Broncos superstar saying, you know, I kind of think they really have a chance here, which is not a ringing endorsement from somebody who, like, you know, lives and breathes Broncos. That's a sign of where most of us are in this game at this point. We're kind of trying to stack things up to see, you know, this is the way the Broncos could possibly maybe kind of sort of do it. We're not saying that about the Panthers.
It's interesting. I'm like you. I've run the gamut of emotions all over this thing, and I go back and forth in the sense of, I don't know if Carolina's receivers, like we talk about who gets disrespected here, maybe Carolina's receiving corps does. I don't know if their receivers can get open with enough time with that Broncos pass rush. And at the same time, you know Denver's only scoring limited points. It just comes down to, can they score enough for 5.5 points or 6 points, if that's what it comes down to.
Right, and you look at it and say, yeah, you kind of pencil in a number around 17 for the Broncos offense. You know,
sure.
Like, okay, well, they'll get this way, and one of them will be a 49-yard field goal, et cetera. And then you look at that, you know, and I look at that receiving core, and that's a mismatch, but it's been a mismatch all year. It really was a mismatch against the Cardinals corners. It was a mismatch against the Legion, for heaven's sakes, in the wild card round. And, you know, what they do is, because they run the ball very well, because they are so multi-dimensional in their running game, they force those cornerbacks up. They force them to play press, and they force them to peek in the backfield. Because obviously, if there's a chance of read option, Cam Newton's coming to the outside, or there's a reverse, and they run a lot of reverses to a guy like Ted Ginn or a speedster like Philly Brown, those corners have to peek at that. So they're up at the line. They're playing press all the time, and they're great. They're going to press some of the time, but it's designed to get them slowed down, not playing at their full speed. And that's why all year long, guys like Ginn and Funchess and Philly Brown have gotten open against these guys who are better than them. It's a scheme thing, and it's something that I think the Broncos will have trouble with.
In terms of Peyton, when you look at Carolina's D, and Keekly's a star, obviously, and there's Josh Norman, and Thomas Davis is limited. Compare Carolina's D to New England's D. Are these comparable? Is Carolina's that much better?
Are you there?
Yep.
Sorry, I was just Carolina's defense versus New England's defense in terms of Peyton trying to play against both. Are they comparable? Is one that much tougher than the other?
I think this year, by the end of the season, I think the Panthers' defense was a little better than what the New England had. They have better, you know, they're better in the secondary at this point. And those linebackers are some of the best linebackers, particularly for playing a Peyton Manning team, because you want linebackers who respond quickly, who react quickly, and who can spot trends and play chess in the backfield. So, you know, Peyton's going up against a team that, if he's trying to throw underneath and he's trying to outsmart the linebackers by getting the ball, say, to Owen Daniels or guys on crossing routes, he's going to discover first of all, those guys react fast and can get in front of his passes. He better have a mustard on those passes. And second of all, if he does complete a pass, those guys are going to go down. They're going to be tackles right away. It's going to be a 5-yard game, not an 8-yard game. So that's what he's up against here. I think the Patriots were more scheme dependent. They needed to blitz from all angles and do a lot of really crazy Belichick-type coverages against them. But, of course, the real story of that game anyway was the fact that the Broncos were able to tee off on Brady, and I don't think they're going to be able to tee off on Cam Newton that way.
It's tricky with sacks. We haven't seen that much pressure for Newton, and he's had a lot of time. He did get sacked 33 times in 16 games, but that's pretty standard stuff. He doesn't get hit as much as Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, yeah, or obviously quarterbacks on bad teams with bad offensive lines. Ryan Tannehill or Teddy Bridgewater, they were running for their lives a lot of the year. Andrew Luck usually is. Is there a way that you see Denver, like, I feel like we're overestimating how easy it was to get to Brady and Roethlisberger. Those guys aren't regularly sacked. We can't look at them and go, well, they're old, they're past their mid-30s. Of course, you should be able to sack them. The stats show they don't get sacked that often.
So what you can do against Brady at the end of the season particularly is simply tee off and pin your ears back. Not really the same against Roethlisberger, but they didn't have their running game either. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you get a running game out there, that freezes the defenders in their tracks. So Von Miller isn't necessarily getting blocked by somebody who's better than Von Miller. He's getting slowed down by the fact he has to watch Cam Newton, has to contain Cam Newton, has to worry about Jonathan Stewart and all of these other factors. You know, if I see sacks, one or two things is going to happen. One is the Broncos could have an opportunity to just simply dominate some one-on-one matchups. And maybe they don't get the sack because Cam Newton escapes, but they force him on the run and make him throw on the run, you know, maybe when he doesn't want to. The other thing that can happen is you can get coverage sacks against Cam. When you watch Cam like take a sack, a lot of times he's in the pocket for 4 seconds, doesn't see what he likes. They contained him. They didn't give him a lane to escape, and he winds up taking like a big one, like a 10-yard sack. There may be some opportunities for that. That's the kind of thing Denver has to count on, because that's one of the things they have to stack up to make it add up to a win.
Mike Tannier, our guest, a national NFL writer for Bleacher Report and Football Outsiders Almanac. It's such a tricky stat. I always feel like defensive ends that are great at it, it kind of, I think you can overpay and fall in love with guys who are high in sack numbers. I think the Bills did that with Mario Williams and gave money nobody else was going to give him. But I also think maybe we're overestimating Newton's escapability. He's really good at it, but you know, there's a lot of slower quarterbacks that just get rid. Eli Manning's no gazelle, and he doesn't get sacked that often. And Alex Smith can run like crazy, and he was fourth in sacks for quarterbacks. On the negative side, he got sacked 45 times this year.
There are so many factors that go into it. I've studied this statistically, and I don't want to get deep into that. But, you know, there are a couple of ways. One is that there's mobility that does not involve running. You know, Tom Brady is mobile in that he can take a half a step to the side,
right,
change the angles, and also he can release the ball quickly, so you can do that. There's also a decision-making element in this, and there are quarterbacks who can run really well but run themselves into sacks. Remember, Randall Cunningham was one of the most sacked quarterbacks in history, and because eventually you catch him. You know, he escapes the first 4 or 5 times. Russell Wilson has high sack total. What you saw from Cam this year is you found more of a balance behind his ability to run and his ability to do other things to escape sacks. It still isn't ideal. It still isn't maximized, but it's a lot better than it was a couple of years ago, where you might have him scramble for this many yards but then lose this many yards on the other side on sack.
So does Cam lead the way? Like, when we're talking, we got spoiled, right? The last 10, 12 years, we had the big six. We were in a golden age of quarterbacks with the Bradys and the Breeze, and the Peyton Manning, the Roethlisberger in there. To you, going forward, there's Russell Wilson, there's Cam Newton, and I guess maybe a distant third is Andrew Luck. But do those two guys especially kind of lead the way into the next generation here?
This is the next generation. You're exactly right, and you hit it. And we're so spoiled that we acted spoiled. So when we look at an Eli Manning, like, oh, Eli Manning, yep, he's not this guy,
sure,
that guy. And there are a lot of other people along the way, like Philip Rivers, who had this tremendous career.
Yeah, Romo.
Like, oh, yep, he was this. Yeah, and Romo, absolutely. That's a great choice. So now, and of course, you got guys like Aaron Rodgers who are sort of across those generations, but you hit the three guys right now who are that. And I don't have any question Andrew Luck's going to bounce back. You know, the people I talk to say, well, you look at all these circumstances, and that's what happened with him. But you have him, you have Russell Wilson, of course, you have Cam Newton, of course. And, you know, I've talked to so many general managers who are excited about Derek Carr, and they're excited about Bridgewater, and they're excited about Winston and Mariota. And I think we're entering another golden age. And what I hope doesn't happen is that this golden age doesn't turn into two guys and everybody else has to cut bait, you know, the way it was with Brady and Manning. That we see a diversity of guys who get to say, yes, there are outstanding quarterbacks across this league, not 32 of them, but enough of them that a lot of fans have something to get excited about, and they all get to get their say. It isn't like, well, if you're not Brady and you're not Manning, you're garbage. That's where we were a little too often in the last 10 years.
It's tough to see it with Luck because for all the people, like, it's such revisionist history. Cam kind of struggled his first couple of years, had some immaturities about him, won 11 out of 32 games. Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin had better seasons in their first year than Cam did in his second year. So it's not like all of us were hating on Cam Newton, but we got shiny new toys came along like Luck and RG3 and Wilson and Kaepernick, and it's okay to talk about them. They're the teams that were going deeper. Mike, you'd remember Carolina was a 2 seed and Kaepernick went in Newton's first playoff game and they fed Carolina their lunch that season 3 years ago.
Yeah, and if you're really trying to evaluate these guys moving forward and take a long view, you have to take a long view. You can't say, well, this is what happened in that game, so that's the end of that. We do way too much of that in this business. And the other thing is, you know, when I talk to general managers, they talk about a 5-year development cycle for quarterbacks, and we don't want to hear that. We want to go 4 games into the rookie year, declare him the answer, you know, and midway through the second season, if he has a slump, he's garbage. And I think that speaks to certainly Newton, because we're like, oh, my God, he hasn't reached his potential yet. He's only made the playoffs twice or whatever, you know, before this. And I think it speaks to Luck as well, where he had these, like, two or three dynamic seasons. And then this year he has injuries. He has, you know, makes some mistakes, certainly, too. Has the team fall around him a little bit. And we're like, oh, well, let's put him in a different list. Let's look at the body of work and say, when this guy comes back healthy and the team comes back with some better answers, he's going to be smoking it as well.